Test 1, 2. Test 1, 2. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor. And in this show, I'm going to break down the game of college football, try to give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. All right, everyone, welcome to week 2 of the college football season. This episode, we will be reviewing film for the University of Utah versus UCLA in week 1, as well as going over a very, very minimal scouting report for the Cal Poly Mustangs, who the Utes will take on at home this coming Saturday. First off, I apologize for how late it's taken this episode to get out. It's been kind of a crazy week with Labor Day weekend and a couple things flooding at work. It's taking a little bit of my attention. So anyway, very short episode today, I hope, and I apologize for it coming out late. But really, I think this episode is going to be more kind of discussing and reviewing some of the things we learned about the Utes in week 1. And then, like I said, very minimal preparation for what should ultimately be a blowout against an FCS school that I'm a little bit mystified how they got on our schedule. I know that in this day and age, there's not a whole lot of motivation to have, you know, high quality teams on your preseason schedule or on your non-conference schedule. But I would hope that we would shoot for a little bit more greatness than this. But anyway, going back real quick to review UCLA versus Utah in Pasadena last weekend, the Utes looked awesome. I think it was highly deserved that they jumped BYU in the rankings, and that's coming from the BYU side of my fandom. I mean, the Utes looked good. Not that UCLA, like we mentioned last week, has always been this stalwart, amazing football program. I mean, they have good history, you know, and they didn't get into the Big Ten by accident, right? They probably got into the Big Ten because of their basketball program, let's be real. But UCLA is not a team that you would think would lose, especially with their quarterback, Nico Iamaleava, by 33 points to, you know, a basically brand new Utah offense. So 43-10 looked really good. I think most people that we've spoken to, super, super pumped about the performance of Devin Dampier. Gosh, what a change from last year to this year. Last year's offense, slow, predictable, frustrating, no momentum, no excitement, no big plays. This year, it was like, gosh, you could never tell where they were going to go. You know, explosive runs, explosive passes, passes short, passes medium, passes long. Everyone contributed, right? I myself was shocked when watching Devin. I found myself and all my friends that we watched the game together with, we all found ourselves being like, okay, this is awesome having a running quarterback in Devin, but we were kind of hoping, gosh, we wish he'd kind of reel it in and run a little bit less. You know, we know what it's like to have a really amazing quarterback in Cam Rising get hurt because he runs too much. I think Devin, from the one game I've watched him in, he seems like he's probably a little bit less fragile than Cam Rising was, but still, you hate to see that. But I was still shocked. If you had told me that his line was going to be 21 for 25 for just over 200 yards passing and for 2 touchdowns, QBR of 88.8, by the way, I was shocked. I was surprised to hear that those were his stats. So very impressive, very awesome. I would love to see Devin this week get a little more settled, especially against an inferior FCS defense. Sit in the pocket, make some good throws, you know, kind of develop some of the skills and the reads that he's going to need later down the line against a much more challenging, you know, Big 12 schedule. But still, overall, very impressive. Also on the quarterback train, I thought it was very interesting that when it came time to put in backup, so we did not see Lisa's youngest son, but that we saw instead a freshman, Bird Ficklin, who was awesome, by the way. He had some good runs, had some throws. Very exciting to have another dynamic quarterback, which I don't know that we can say for sure that he's in the QB2 spot. It would make sense that if he went in second, he's the QB2. But being that Coach Kyle Whittingham and the rest of the Utah football team is not releasing depth charts this year, that's kind of the assumption we have to make, is that Lisa's son taking the backseat to new freshman Bird Ficklin. So pretty cool. The other offensive standout, I thought there were a couple awesome offensive standouts that we didn't really have in our preseason preview or in the week one, film studies, scouting report for Utah, which was number two Smith Snowden playing kind of a slot back, kind of an H back, where he was catching screens, he was taking handoffs, sweep or jet handoffs. He was catching footballs, and boy, did he, number one, he filled out. He's always been a little bit on the skinnier side. He's always, had some good size, but he's always been a little bit thinner. And I don't know what the strength and conditioning staff and also the nutrition staff did for him this offseason, but he has filled out and he has maintained his quickness. I never realized how quick he was when he's back there in the defensive backfield as a safety, because he's always coming up field or kind of waiting for people to come to him. But boy, was he quick. Really awesome. I thought he, even more than Devin Dampier, who we expected Devin to be amazing, and he was, and that was really gratifying and awesome that he was. But I think Smith Snowden was for sure the offensive standout. That's last week against UCLA. So hoping that he can stay involved this next week against Cal Poly. Obviously, from the rushing standpoint, we are super happy to have transfer Wayshon Parker. He had some great carries. He had 11 carries for 62 yards and a touchdown. Nikari Rogers, 16 carries for 61 yards, so just 1 yard behind Wayshon Parker. That's 120 yards rushing between your two best running backs, which is exactly what you want, plus another 87 on top of that from your quarterback. That's pretty stellar. If you count everybody from top to bottom, 286 yards of rushing on top of 206 yards of passing, which puts the Utah offense right on the mark for what Jason Beck's offense averaged last year, about 485 yards of offensive production with multiple touchdowns. So really, really awesome offense. Fun to see it function. Fun to see it all come together. Another fun defensive standout that made his way over to the offensive side of the ball was Lander Barton. Just one catch for 14 yards and a touchdown. But again, awesome to see him coming out. A couple other guys that stood out from a receiving standpoint. Tight end number 88, Dallin Bentley, who looks to be the main guy to kind of take on the rest of the historical tight end productivity that we've had at Utah over the last 7 or 8 years. A couple other guys, J.J. Buchanan, receiver, had 3 receptions. Number 9, Ryan Davis, had some receptions as well. So really, really awesome offense. We did have 2 fumbles, neither of which were lost, but that's a little bit of a change for Wayshon Parker over the last couple of years. Defensively, I thought Utah looked awesome. There were 2 series where they kind of bended and then kind of broke, right? They gave up 10 points to UCLA. But again, to an offense that consists of so many high quality transfers, I think the UCLA just had a hard time putting things together. I was almost mourning for Nico Iamaliava, thinking about the decision he made to go from a high quality SEC program where he likely would have gone to the league, probably would have played for a national championship at some point, or at least been in the college football playoff conversation every year that he was there, still making $2 million a year. It's not half bad compared to, sure, making $4 million a year at UCLA is cool, but the real money's in the NFL, and I felt bad that he had to settle for his first game of the year at his new school, losing by 33 points to a building Utah team. So anyway, very, very pleased with the outcome of the game last week in Pasadena. I don't know if there's anything else more I can say about the team. Looking forward to Cal Poly this coming week. Let's talk very briefly. Not a lot of people are as familiar with Cal Poly, California Polytechnic University. Cal Poly is an FCS school, which means, for those of you that are less familiar with football, you've got, FBS, which is Division I college football, and then FCS or Division I AA college football, next level down. Cal Poly belongs to the Big Sky Conference, which you may have heard of when we talk about teams like Weber State, or other teams in the West, Idaho State, University of Montana, the Grizz, or Eastern Washington. Historically speaking, Cal Poly is bad. Over the last eight seasons, the Mustangs have had records like 3-8, 2-9, even 1-10 1 year. The last time they had a winning season was back in 2016 when they went 7-6. And their last nine-win season, which is the only nine-win season that I was able to find, was all the way back in 2012, including a massive, quote-unquote massive win over Utah's matchup next week, Wyoming. So, yeah, let's dive in real quick. Don't want this episode to be too long. Offensively, well, just program-wide head coach, to quote one of my favorite Disney characters, Emperor Kuzco. Don't know, don't care. How's that? I don't know who the coaching staff is. I don't think it matters. Offensive coordinator, same thing. A couple of things to look out for on the offensive side of the ball. Their quarterback, his name is Ty Diffenbach, number 7. He's pretty big. He's 6'6", 220-pound sophomore. So he's young. He's learning. Last week against San Diego, he was 18 for 27 for 263 yards and two touchdowns through the air. He had no interceptions and averaged just under 10 yards per throw. He's pretty long, like I said. He tends to want to run quite a lot. He's pretty apt to pull the ball down and if his first or second read isn't there. He led the team in rushing on 11 carries for 69 yards, which is nice. Most of those yards came on a 43-yard jump, though. He had one touchdown on the ground. If I'm Morgan Scalley, just with his tendency to really want to pull the ball down fast, I mean, he can, don't get me wrong, he can throw the ball, but he tends to want to run. If I'm Morgan Scalley, I bring one backer on a blitz, and I leave one back as a spy to kind of force the kid to run and limit Cal Poly's ability to get the ball to their playmakers on the periphery. Speaking of playmakers on the periphery, they have a running back, number 19, Zion Hall. He's 5'8", 180. Not super huge. He's a senior. Last week, he had 12 carries for about 48 yards, average of 4 yards a carry. So he can be productive, but he just gets underutilized, I think. He's obviously pretty small. He's pretty scrappy, though. He can be quick. He can run well if given space. Caught a few passes last week, but again, I think the difference in talent should close any difference that he could create because of his athleticism. Wide receivers, you know, really only one guy to pay attention to. He's kind of their go-to guy. Number 10, Michael Briscoe. He's a 6'2", 205-pound senior. He had most, if not almost all, of their offensive production last week through the air. He had 7 receptions for 110 yards, which is pretty awesome. He had 16 yards per catch, including 2 touchdowns, and his longest reception was a 42-yard snag. So he's pretty athletic. He can get open. He's pretty quick. He runs good routes. He's sharp on his routes. That's one thing I can really appreciate, even at different levels of competitiveness, you know, whether it's FCS or FBS or NFL or even high school. You got to respect a kid that can run good, sharp routes. He can get open. He's pretty quick. He can move through space quickly while avoiding tacklers. So, again, I think the talent gap between, you know, Cal Poly and Utah will erase any difference this kid could make. But if there was someone to watch out for on the offensive side, it's number 10. Another quick note, again, I only mention this because I think at some point we might see this kid at quarterback. They have another guy, number 1, Anthony Grigsby Jr. He's 5'11", 195 pounds. He's a junior. He has a little more experience, I think. He's a little bit older. They brought him in some running situations. He's a little bit smaller, obviously, than Diffenbach. Diffenbach's just huge, number 7. Number 1 is a little bit smaller. He did some running. He threw a couple passes, and he certainly seemed a little bit more relaxed in the pocket than Diffenbach would. Wouldn't be surprised to see him come out in the game near the end of the game, whether just in different situations or if Diffenbach is their go-to guy. You know, once they get down, hopefully 40, 50, 60 points, they'll bring out their backups. So keep an eye out for number 1, maybe do some running, maybe some more controlled passing. Offensively, you know, from a strategy perspective, they run like a basic spread offense, nothing special. The biggest thing that I noticed on the film from last week against San Diego is they like to run a lot of screens. Like I mentioned before, they like to get the ball in the hands of their playmakers, number 19 Hall, the running back, and number 10 Briscoe, their wide receiver, and just let them run. So lots of like wide receiver screens, lots of running back screens, slip screens. They'll do some basic, you know, off spread offense routes, posts, hitches, corners, stuff like that. Most of the routes seem to be, you know, vertically stretching routes. From a running perspective, they will run out of both shotgun and an ace formation, which is where the quarterback is under center, single running back behind the quarterback, a little bit more of a traditional West Coast offense, maybe. A lot of outside running. They don't run up the middle very much. They like to do some outside sweeps, maybe some outside zones, or like a stretch play where everyone kind of, all the offensive line, if we're going to run to the right, all the offensive linemen are also going to run to the right, try to turn their shoulders and get their backs towards the sideline to kind of create a wall for that running back to get around. So kind of a reach block. It's what we call a reach block to set up a wide stretch run to try to get outside the corner. From a defensive standpoint, their defensive coordinator could be Santa Claus. I don't know. It's my best guess. Listen, I'm not going to go too much into detail here. Like I said before, this is an FCS school whose defense should pose no real threat to Utah this week. They run a basic nickel defense, the most common defense in college football. You've heard me mention it basically every episode last year and every episode this year. It's a standard 4-2-5, occasionally a 3-3-5 or a 3-3-5 stack. They'll run some blitzes, mostly with their backers, but occasionally they'll gamble with a safety blitz here and there. I'm really not going to spend any time on personnel here. Our veteran O-line should own this FCS D-line. Our running backs should look to run through their linebackers, much like LJ Martin did for BYU last week against Portland State. I'm looking forward to Wayshon Parker and Nakari Rogers dragging a lot of bodies. Honestly, though, if it's me, the players that should be licking their chops the most this week should be Devin Dampier and all of Utah's wide receivers. Inferior talent that should not be able to keep up on the defensive side with who I think could be the Heisman candidate at quarterback. There are a bunch of wideouts and slot receivers at Utah that are hungry to prove themselves as the next standout wide receiver for the Utes. So I would love to see Jason Beck attack through the air a lot this week. Heaven knows he'll be able to establish the run. That's going to be no problem. I would love to see as many receivers catch touchdowns as possible, and would love to see Devin Dampier put up similar to or greater numbers, honestly, than Bear Bachmeier did last week for BYU, meaning at least 200 yards passing, at least three touchdowns, maybe more, through the air, and probably a pair of running touchdowns as well. It's the same conversation this week for Utah that we were having last week for BYU. In order to impress the College Football Playoff Committee, Utah needs to score 60 points or more in this game, and it needs to be a shutout, no questions asked. I'll be pretty disappointed if it isn't so. As far as my prediction for this week goes, I'm kind of a negative Nelson. I always feel like my teams are going to underperform what I expect from them to do. Maybe I should be more optimistic. I don't know. I would hope for 65-0 or 73-0. I'm going to say maybe we get 56-3 or something like that. Usually, sometimes these FCS schools will come out and maybe the FBS schools is underestimating them too much in that first series. They might come out really quickly and get kind of down on the Utah third of the field and maybe kick a field goal. But I'm going to say 56-3, something like that, but really hoping for a 73-0 type of game. Really, we should be looking forward to next week for Utah, which again is a game that is a lower level of competition than I would have hoped for. But you know what? Wyoming has given us trouble in the past. Obviously we used to share a conference with them in the Mountain West. Really looking forward to going to Wyoming next week. I fully expect Utah to come out of this next week, not only 2-0, but the week after that 3-0, leading into Texas Tech for week 4. Really not a whole lot else to go on as far as this game is concerned. So we'll wrap up. Review of question 2 from last week. I got some responses from some of y'all that were listening. I got a lot of Bobby Boucher was by far the number one most favorite, fictional or movie football player. Got a lot of Bobby Boucher. One buddy who facetiously told me that his favorite fictional football player, actually this person isn't fiction, I hope they are, was from Remember the Titans. Y'all remember Ray? Racist Ray and all of his buddies? I think he was being facetious because obviously that would be horrible. But so yeah, I think Bobby Boucher from The Waterboy comes out as the most highly picked favorite football player. This week's question: who is the best sports movie villain of all time? Not just football movies, sports movies in general. Who's the best villain? Hit me up. Let me know what you think. And we'll talk about it next week. Go Utes.